I beg of you, monsieur, you cannot refuse.
But it is the duty of the Yugoslavian police.
What, monsieur, to question my passengers on my line? Never. Now, you must solve the mystery. When we get to Broad, if we ever do, we present the police with a fait accompli. We say that a murder has occurred. There is the criminal.
I should like the Pullman coach reserved for the investigation's headquarters.
It will be at your disposal.
And the plan of the Kelly coach with the names and locations of all the people in it.
Yes, it will be there.
And the passports of all the passengers concerned.
Here, you can even have mine.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Street Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to sleep with a hairnet and a mustache net to keep everything slicked back. Not pushed back, Perk. Slicked back. Alex Perkins, Perk, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thanks. This doesn't just happen.
No. Yeah,
there's steps to the process, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a behind the scenes sometime.
Yeah, you do what you gotta do. I just gotta say to that point, like when we first see, is it Poirot? How does he pronounce it?
Poirot.
We first see Poirot in the restaurant. We get like a behind the head shot and you see like all of the shit in his hair. Almost like it's kind of nasty. Like I did not like it. Like his hair is fucking slicked. Yeah, that's not for me.
Yep.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you liked our show, we post every Friday on podcast services as well as YouTube. And go give us a follow on TikTok as well. We'd appreciate it. But last week, we watched The Duelists, and we followed Albert Finney to this week's film, Murder on the Orient Express. Perk, why don't you draw it for us?
Yeah, all right. So Murder on the Orient Express is a 1974 joint directed by Sidney Lumet, starring freaking everybody, dude. Sean Connery, Lauren Bacall, Ingrid Bergman, Anthony Perkins, just to name a few. It's a sack cast, and honestly, I was kind of like geeking about it the whole time. And it is about a murder on the Orient Express.
Wow, shocker.
Yep. Just out of convenience, the detective Hercule Poirot winds up on the Orient Express with 12 passengers and somebody dies. And then they unravel the mystery over the course of a couple hours. Mm-hmm. Few fun facts. Agatha Christie was still alive when this movie came out. She was 84. Mm. She went to the premiere. And this is one of the few, I think only two film adaptations of her books that she liked. Her biggest complaint was that Poirot's mustache was not goofy enough. Which is...
It's pretty goofy. I mean, it could be goofier.
It is, but I mean, compared to like the Kenneth Branagh mustache. It's not quite in the same caliber.
Mm-hmm.
The story, which... the inciting incident, it feels redundant, but I don't think it is that there's a baby, the Armstrong baby, who's murdered. Mm-hmm. And the Armstrong baby story is based off of the Lindbergh baby story, which
I was going to say, I'm like, this sounds familiar. Yeah,
another incredibly prominent kidnapping and murder story. Mm-hmm. So that's where the basis came from. Let's see. The craziest thing I saw on here is Albert Finney, who plays Poirot. He required so many hours of makeup before shooting, and he was performing in a stage play at the same time.
Oh my god!
That he didn't have enough hours for sleep, so they developed a routine where every morning an ambulance would come to his house, and they would pick him up. Without like trying not to wake him, load him into the ambulance and drive him the 30 minutes to the set while makeup artists were putting on like the rough makeup while he was still asleep, which is just,
that is insane.
It is. That is insane. It's bonkers. Like kudos to the man. Could not have been easy running double duty like that.
Woke me up for sure. God damn. Perk, I'll go first to this movie. I was surprised how much I enjoyed this. For some reason, I thought like the mystery wasn't going to be that compelling or like it was going to be predictable. But I did not guess that literally all of them were the killer.
Yeah, and I was going to say,
it's unraveled is crazy.
Did you not know that ending?
No, I mean, I've probably seen it parodied, but I was just kind of locked in and just kind of enjoying the ride. And I was like, oh, it's probably red herring, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But I was like, you know, like, yeah, it all came together and him like doing the final reveal is very satisfying and very fun. And I was like, yeah, that was a really, like, really cool story. Like, I had a great time with it. I think, like, it's incredibly goofy at times, but I think overall it is, like, well acted. And Poirot is, he's a character. He's somebody to watch for sure. So, yeah, had a good time.
Yeah, so I knew the story, and I knew that the ending was that they all killed him. I did not know the mechanic. I kind of assumed that, I don't know, like, just from ignorance, I assumed that, like, everyone snuck in overnight at different times and stabbed him just on coincidence, which now that I think about it, there's not a lot of time where that could have all transpired without them bumping into each other.
Yeah, because I was thinking maybe it was two people. Like, one person went to kill him first and another person came to kill him. I didn't know the first person had already done it or something like that.
Yeah, it's an incredibly effective twist. And it's just so fresh compared to a lot of, like, the whodunit type stuff where, you know, your brain's picking at, like, they all kind of have a... Because that's always how it happens. Everyone has a motive, but then it turns out it's one guy. And, like, this... That's just, like, a trope of the genre. But it's when you see it subverted like this, or like the original Knives Out, where it's not a whodunit because we immediately know who did it, and then it unfolds from there. It's very refreshing to see kind of different ways to do it. And this is just a super creative one, because every red herring is like, no, you're right. they did it.
That was one of the funniest things, because they're doing the interrogations, right? And Bianchi, the director of screen, is like, no, he did it. It's like a joke.
I loved having the peanut gallery there, just like every time. It's like, shoot, they did it together.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, this is funny. But he was right. Like, they literally all did it. And like, it was a really good payoff. And also, it's like how it paid off with the beginning of the movie where he's like, oh, I'm going to take the train. And like, it's full. He's like, this time of year, it's full. It makes no sense. But then it makes sense because they're all there for the reason. So like, it all came together in a really cool way. And Poirot as a character is so interesting, because I always assumed he was going to be more of like a Sherlock, you know, very like
some gravitas.
Like very sophisticated, put together. This dude's, he's kind of a fuck, man. Like,
he's a bumbling goob. Yeah.
Yeah. He gave me, you haven't seen Suits, but for those who've seen Suits, he gave me major Lewis Litt vibes. Like, He's just kind of a fuck, man. And it's like really funny. So like, this is not the character I expected. Like, the beginning of the movie, he's in Bianchi at the restaurant. He's like, oh, this food fucking sucks. You know, and like, you know, I expected a more, like, distinguished, put together person.
Yeah.
But he like cares a ton about his appearance. And like, it's just very, very odd. But he's fun to watch. And the way he delivers, you know, the ending, I think is very satisfying.
Yeah. And I think he's a more interesting character for being, you know, kind of goofy and quirky. Yeah. If he was all put together, you know, it almost would be a little bit boring. But
the
stupid mustache net and the hair net is just, he's a character that has character. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if we want to start with this, but like, I as far as like my thought process watching this movie, like, McQueen, you know, the secretary guy, I'm like, this dude's easy red herring, but also he looks like he's feeling guilty.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what's going on there? And
that's just like credit to the actors, because every actor had like the glint of like guilt.
Yes.
And some a little bit more overt than others, but you can kind of pick up on it on all of them, that at a minimum they were hiding something.
Right. And I expected a lot of them were, but the thing they were hiding didn't actually matter for the murder. I saw like, oh, they have a, like, similar, like with Sean Connery and Vanessa Redgrave, where they were hiding the divorce thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's some stuff like that where they have a secret, but the secret doesn't actually matter. But it's like, no, like, they were literally all in on it. And I love that. Lauren Bacall's character, like she was acting as that super annoying woman, because she's just the fucking worst. It's like, stop talking, leave me alone, you know. But she was putting on performance, and it was like,
she was awesome.
It was a great twist. Yeah.
I this would be a great movie to rewatch, and I might actually just watch the new one. I assume it's at least a similar story, but because I am sure that there's set up for all of the, you know, all of the characters. Some of them are a little more stretched, that maybe it's a little more fleshed out in the book, but the whole,
it's a lot of people to go through.
Yeah. And a lot of stuff ties back to the princess. So there are a lot of threads that can point towards her. That's fair. Sean Connery is like, he remembered the sergeant's medals, and that's enough to, he must have been a close friend. I see the logic there. It's just a touch more strained, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I agree with you.
Like the maid, is it Belgrade?
It was a cooking thing.
Where she,
the cooking thing, yeah.
Yeah. She knows how to cook. So that means she was the family cook at the Armstrong home. It's like, really?
I was also like, bro, I'm like, some of this is a bit crazy you put this together, but I'll allow it because it's a movie. And
I mean, there are jumps you can make. Like, clearly the maid was working for the princess, and the princess was implicated in a billion ways. And so if you find out, like, oh, 10 of these people had direct connections, I bet the other two do. Maybe you can find a little bit better of a, like, maybe he already assumed she was involved and just got tipped off about her being a cook or something like that.
Right. And that's how I feel like it was with, like, the last two, like the driver and the policeman, where you get barely any time with those guys on screen.
Yeah, I didn't even remember those guys were on the train. It's just like, shows up, he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to talk about the missionary, a.k.a. the housemaid, Ingrid Bergman's character. Because that scene where he's interviewing her, there's no cuts.
Yeah.
It is just them, him just right like by her, and her, just her face. And like, I was very impressed by that scene of just how well she's able to portray this like strained English kind of, you know, so born again Christian kind of stuff. That was incredible.
I've got more on this for you. So it's not really a surprise, because Ingrid Bergman is one of the best actors of all time. I hope we watch more of her soon. But like, by all accounts, Ingrid Bergman is top class. And yes, that part of the reason she agreed to take the role was because Sidney Lumet told her that there was going to be a 5-minute one shot where it's pretty much just focused on her face the whole time. And that scene won her an Oscar. She won Best Supporting Actress for this movie.
Yeah, she deserved it.
Yeah, well, even though in her acceptance speech, she said one of the other nominees deserved it more, fair enough. But no need to be humble. She's incredibly good. But the one of the crazier things is she had been acting in English language movies for almost 40 years at that point. She's Swedish. So playing
she actually is Swedish.
Yes.
Okay.
So playing the Swedish maid, it like should be easy, but she actually needed a dialect coach to kind of up her Swedish accent because it had faded so much from working in Hollywood for all those years.
It's like Gary Oldman kind of.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Gary Oldman, he also does The Method. So I feel like his brain's probably all over the place. But.
Right. Yeah, I just heard that he had like lost his English accent at one point, which is like, weird, but
I believe it 100%. But yeah, just like, honestly, I want to be a little more critical, like critical thinking wise about this movie, but I was just the novelty of the cast and how good everyone was in their roles. And so there's just a lot of fun facts about this movie, but part of the reason for the casting choices is Sidney Lumet thought that with so many characters, it would be hard for the audience to keep them straight. So he cast all giant actors for the roles. That
not a bad idea.
No, it would have definitely helped at the time. It was maybe a little tougher for us young folk who aren't especially familiar.
I was like, I know Sean Connery. Yeah, that's about it.
and Sean Connery was first on board, the justification was, you know, if you get the biggest one, the next will follow, which he was very flattered by. But yeah, I like all the performances in this one are great. I think Albert Finney as Poirot is a little goofy, but I think that's probably the spirit of it.
Considering, yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, right? Considering yeah. Agatha Christie liked it, and he got a Best Actor nomination out of it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm with you. Like, I want to critique this movie a bit, but yeah, I said kind of a lot of fun looking back on it. I think the opening is a bit slow. I think it takes a little bit too long to get going. And, like, starting with the newspapers of the baby, I was like, what's going on? Like, how is this related? And, of course, it's, like, very important.
I thought the newspaper mechanic was cool, but it kind of went on for a long time.
Yeah. There was a lot of it. Some of the headlines were, like, kind of funny. It was like, oh, no, baby, or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was obviously a very tragic thing, but I was like, it was just a little bit goofy as well. But, yeah, I think once it stopped, once the murder happens and you're really in it, you're watching it. Like you said, I think the peanut gallery of the doctor and Bianchi is, like, a very underrated component of this movie. Like, them being there just adds so much, like, comedy and also his ability for dialogue to happen. But also, like, Poirot is hiding a lot from them. He is, like, thinky a lot more about stuff he's not revealing, and then we get the big reveal at the end, which, like, logically, you never do that in real life. You never, like, reveal to everyone what actually happened. But it's super satisfying. And, like, I think it also, but it does kind of make sense in this one because he realizes all of them are the killer.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, let's talk about it, and what are we going to do? And him deciding to not turn them in, I actually didn't mind because he had shown so much passion for how upset he was about the five people that had died due to the incident. He could have been bluffing that to get a reaction in people, but I thought it was genuine if, like, he was actually pissed off about that. So,
yeah, I thought that they set up really well that he clearly cared a lot about that case.
Yeah.
And I was very happy with the ending because sometimes you kind of just want, like, a fist pumping, like, yeah. Screw that guy. Rotten hell, dirtbag. Like,
yeah.
So I really liked the way they went with the ending. I didn't know that part. I didn't know he kind of let him off with it. But I liked that decision because, you know, so many movies end in less positive lights. And I guess you couldn't call Getting Away with Murder positive. But in this case, rip Bozo.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude was an absolute piece of shit. one other goofy thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Perk, but the notes he was getting, every letter was written by a different person. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's
I'm pretty
kinda,
sure they said that.
That's kind of goofy for me. It's like how many capital letters that are all written in different handwriting? And it's 12. It's like, what?
I was imagining all of them going to a house like, okay, I'm gonna write this one, and you write this one. Like, how long did that take? And do they write all these notes ahead of time? Like, you can't think about it too much, but like,
no, and then also like the 12 men in a jury. Like, What does that have to do with anything? It's just the same number. I don't think he's incriminating himself by saying how many people are on a jury, but maybe it's a Freudian slip.
Maybe it was a reference to 12 Angry Men that was directed also by
Sidney Lumet.
Yeah. Also did Dog Day Afternoon, which
we're big Sidney Lumet fans around here, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, also fun fact, because I looked it up. So Vanessa Redgrave, who played Miss Debenham, played Max in Mission Impossible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you know?
And then she also voiced the Witch of the Waste in Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, cool.
So callbacks to previous episodes. Because I saw her picture on IMDb. I'm like, I recognize her. I didn't recognize her in the film because she was so young. But I was like, oh, yeah, she's Max. Yeah, I don't have too much more to say with me. I had a great time. I felt bad for Pierre a lot in this movie because he was kind of getting shit on, but then he was a part of it. So I'm like, all right, it's fine. But yeah, this is a very fun movie. I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting story. I think even if you know the twist, it's worth watching because it's well told, it's well acted, well directed. It's just kind of solid thumbs up overall.
Yeah. Well, that is our review of Murder on the Orient Express, 1974 version. I guess recommendations.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I like the one I would throw out just because it's another kind of creative twist on the genre is Knives Out.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Specifically not Knives Out 2, because that is a very straightforward genre movie. It's just more of a straight whodunit. But Knives Out, the first one, is like a fantastic example of how you can kind of contort the genre and make it more interesting.
Yeah. Well, and they're both ensemble pieces as well, though.
Yeah.
Like, they're both ensemble cast.
I mean, I like Knives Out 2 quite a bit. It's just, it doesn't kind of break from tradition as hard.
Yeah. Well, I know Rian Johnson is very inspired by Agatha Christie for those. So, yeah, those are good shout.
The scene where they all get on the boat at the start kind of reminded me, like, oh,
yeah,
there's a scene like that in Knives Out 2. So I'm sure that was a direct inspiration.
For sure. For sure. So, yeah, that's Murder on the Orient Express. Before a review are watching next week, it's we'll do a little bit of bonus reviews.
I don't have any because I just went and saw The Boy and the Heron again, and I like that movie a lot, and everybody should go see it. Okay.
There you go. I watched Black Klansman for the first time.
Ooh.
This last week, my roommates were looking for someone to watch, and it was on my Netflix, and it was expiring soon. So I'm like, yeah, let's watch Black Klansman. Great movie. I mean, Spike Lee knows what he's doing. You know,
if it's a Spike Lee joint, it's going to slap.
If it's a Spike Lee joint and it's like not the Old Boy remake, actually telling a story, you know, from his perspective, like, I don't know. I really liked it. Performances are fantastic. You know, Adam Driver is great. John David Washington's great. Story is super fascinating. And like, I love just how much David Duke gets shit on. And Topher Grace does a great job in that role.
Topher Grace is so good.
He's it's so like good.
Perfect casting.
And like Spike Lee just does some really powerful stuff in that movie where he mirrors and goes back and forth between the Ku Klux Klan and the black community. Like there's a scene where they're specifically like cutting back and forth between the two of them. And it's just incredibly powerful. And then him ending with like the Charlottesville like Nazi white supremacist stuff, I think was really powerful as well. So, yeah, Spike Lee's great. I love all his stuff in Black Klansman's another hit.
It's a fantastic movie. I agree.
Yeah. But I want to end this episode perk by just talking about some of the Variety matchups we've been seeing lately. So if you're listening, you don't know, every year Variety does actors on actors and also directors on directors, usually where we get actors chatting to each other about their work and directors chatting to each other. And this year, I think, has been one of, if not the best year ever. Just absolutely incredible pairings and some great conversations. But Perk, what have been some highlights for you so far?
Yeah, so I think sometimes these pairings can kind of come off as like a little bit less personal and more just like each of them kind of waxing lyrical about how good the other is. And,
yeah.
Like they clearly watched their movie earlier in the week and
yep.
That's kind of what they're basing on. But I get a good kick out of the ones where they have a little bit more in-depth of a conversation. So I think the highlight for me, which is surprising because I'm not really familiar with any of either actor's work, but was Jacob Elordi and Colman Domingo.
Yep. I loved that one.
It's just they have such a good conversation and they, you know, talk about their mothers and their upbringing and the grind and spirituality. It's just they have a fantastic conversation. Like set aside from also, you know, talking about the films they're in, none of which I'm overly excited to see. So that just even more goes to show. But I mean, also on top of that, I mean, there have been a lot of fun pairings. I think they started with Cillian Murphy and Margot Robbie because obviously they had to do a Barbenheimer.
The first one was RDJ and Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, that's right. That one was also good.
That was very good, yeah.
Because they're chums, but yeah, one of the first was the Barbenheimer, which
yeah,
you know you gotta do it,
gotta do it. And that was honestly a great conversation. And Cillian Murphy's so funny because I saw some memes about like because he's very introverted and you know there's a section where Margot Robbie's just like talking for a while and he's going and I saw like a meme that was like me when talking to any extrovert just like nodding and saying and just yeah she's going but yeah that was a great conversation.
And on the directors on directors side, I got a kick out of the pairing of Yorgos Lanthimos and Ari Aster because it's like, let's put the two guys who make the weird, crazy out there movies together. And they have, you know, decent conversations. And it's not my favorite of the conversations, but I just love the pairing. Yeah. And then there was a really great one with Spike Lee and Bradley Cooper as well.
Yeah.
That I thought was like, I don't want to see Maestro, but when Spike Lee saw it three times and says it's the bomb, I have to.
Yeah.
And like it was Martin Scorsese had it privately screened at his home. And I got to go see that movie, I guess, which is biopic season, baby.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be on Netflix soon. But yeah, no, I realized what they did with directors on directors this year, because it wasn't, I mean, there was the Yorgos and Ari Aster conversation, but most of them have been a director from this year and like one of their mentors, which I think was a really nice twist. Like we get Michael B. Jordan and Ben Affleck, which I didn't know they were like close, but like Ben
Affleck's been kind of mentoring him. That was another good one.
Same thing with Bradley Cooper and Spike Lee. And then I loved the Greta Gerwig, James Cameron conversation. I thought that was just outstanding. And that was one of the ones you could just tell both of them were just so engaged. Like James Cameron was asking really good questions and bringing a lot of interesting things up. And I just, yeah, I don't know. James Cameron's a person that like, I think is easy to think of as like kind of pretentious because of the movies he makes. But every time I see him in a conversation like this, I'm like, no, he's like a fan of movies and he like knows what he's talking about. And he seems like a pretty good
guy. Yeah, he's an incredibly interesting guy too, with like the interview he did in front of his like, his little nerd headquarters with his
always does that, dude. It's so funny. Deep
sea probes and stuff. And it's just, and at the same time, he's talking about like, yeah. So the first time I saw Barbie, because you know he's a goon. He's seen Barbie more than once. It's just, that was such a good one too, because like you could tell that Greta Gerwig was a little bit like awestruck, like very excited for the conversation, but also like. Like James Cameron's out here picking out like things he really appreciates about Greta Gerwig's work. And it's like,
yeah,
he's right. But like, it's crazy that he's one of her peers, so it shouldn't be crazy, but it's cool that there's that recognition there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really awesome. Other ones I liked another shout out to the Jacob Elordi Coen Domingo one. I think that one was outstanding. I think if you're a fan of Devil Wears Prada, you have to watch the Emily Blunt and Hathaway one. That's just a fun kind of reunion and fun chat. I like the Taraji P. Henson and Jeffrey Wright one a lot. And then I also really like the Andrew Scott, Greta Lee one.
Kind
of talking about like how to show like love on screen and like intimate moments and stuff. And that was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah. I don't want to see Andrew Scott's movie at all, but like it's getting a lot of buzz. So I probably will.
I don't think that one's going to be that bad. I don't think it's going to rip your heart in half.
I don't know. It'll
make you melancholic, maybe. I don't know.
Well, maybe. it looks pretty sad. But I know that was another good conversation. And I really like Greta Lee. And I loved Past Lives. So, there aren't really a lot of weak points. These interviews are just really good. I thought my only one that I didn't love was the Rachel Zegler and Halle Bailey. Because they didn't really seem to have that much to talk about. Like it was mainly focused on like the movies they're working on, so much to the point that like they barely even mentioned West Side Story, which was I guess a couple years ago now, but kind of Rachel Zegler's big break onto the scene.
Yeah, maybe it's because they're both just so young, like young actors, and have done their stuff. I don't think it's fine. But if I had to rank them, I don't think it'd be.
I also didn't see either of their movies, so that probably doesn't help.
Yeah, but yeah, I think if anything, this has just reminded me how many good movies came out this year. And like, I don't know if I was ever thinking this was like a weak year for movies, but I was like,
oh, I 100% was.
This like, is a fucking good year.
During the writer's strike, I'm like, what is even going to happen during awards season? Nothing has come out. And instead, everything has come out but also that giant kind of void in the middle is allowing people to reach back and remember movies that came out earlier in the year, like Past Lives. So, it's still a pretty full awards slate.
Yeah. And we'll definitely do our predictions and all that on here once the Now it needs to come out. That'll be a fun episode. But yeah, that's our show for this week. Thank you everyone for watching. Next week, we're going to round out this string by doing All the President's Men, a Watergate film. Our connection being Martin Balsam, who played Bacali in this film. So All the President's Men, that is on Amazon Prime until the end of the month. So if you're going to watch it soon, or you can rent it, as always, a backup. But All the President's Men on Prime. Until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.